Hi, everybody. Welcome to Friday. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Gling, sitting in for John Williams today. You can find me online, bestmoneymoves.com, my financial wellness technology platform, or you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn, Instagram, or Sunday mornings at 6:30, This Week in Wealth, my half an hour of chatting with Tom Fortino about investments and retirement. So right now, though, I'd like to talk a little bit about Theranos, which is just absolutely transfixed my imagination on how somebody could actually imagine that they had created a device that would analyze I don't know how many different kinds of diseases from one drop of blood. I've asked Harry Kramer, former CEO of Baxter Healthcare and executive partner with Madison Dearborn Partners and a professor at Kellogg School of Management, to join us today to talk a little bit about this case and what we're seeing with it. Harry, welcome to WGN Radio.
Great to be with you.
So one of the things that has fascinated me is this idea that startups have to fake it till you make it. And this has been made, there's quite a lot of this that's been made in the trial that's going on right now with Elizabeth Holmes, and the idea that she convinced all of these huge names, these people, to come on board, and none of them really tested what she was doing. And she just told them it worked and they believed her. Is this a little bit how Silicon Valley is actually working these days?
Well, again, I always tell the students at Kellogg, I have very few answers, but many, many opinions. So rather than Q&A, I do a lot of Q&O. No, I do not believe the majority of companies do this. I think this is a fairly unique situation where, you know, somebody decided that, you know what, if I could fake it, maybe I could make it and do very, very well. But I think this does not happen in many cases. But in this case, and I can see why you find it fascinating, because it is absolutely fascinating that, you know, and by the way, teaching classes on value-based leadership, which is what I do, this is a great example of exactly what not you should be doing. But again, to be very open about it, you know, one of the reasons she got away with it is because people didn't do their due diligence. They didn't check it. They didn't follow. And most of the people that invested in this company, you know, you ought to be doing your due diligence as to whether or not what she's saying is actually true or not. You just don't believe somebody without checking and doing your due diligence.
Well, I think that's a great point. And I, as the former CEO of a big international healthcare company, you must be able to put yourself in the shoes of, say, you know, one of their big they've got a number of healthcare companies that were investors in it. And just, does it blow your mind that a company might consider investing $50 or $100 million in new technology that they themselves never even tested?
Blows your mind is an understatement. It's absolutely unbelievable. Now, because I try to keep things in balance, that's kind of one of my principles, I always think to myself, when somebody says, I'm really surprised, I always say, I'm surprised you're surprised. And the reason for that is what could happen, and I don't know exactly the details, but think about it this way. If all of a sudden you make an investment in a company, and you, for whatever reason, you don't do your due diligence, you were busy, whatever, and you know, you just didn't do it. Well, now, when I realize you did it, and I respect you and say, well, geez, she must have done her due diligence, and all of a sudden you have more people all assuming that somebody else did the work. So, and because she was clearly a very bright person to get a lot of, as I'm sure you've read, a lot of very, very well-known people involved, you know, George Saltz and Henry Kissinger. And I think, again, people made an assumption, oh, well, if they're involved, it must be something really good. Well, no, notice again what you did. You make an assumption. And I really do believe, and I try to get the Kellogg students to realize, you know what, you don't make assumptions. You know the little expression of what happens when you make assumptions. What you do is you literally do your homework, you figure out what you're doing, and to your point, if you're going to be investing a lot of money in something, by the way, it's usually not your money. It's your investor's money you're investing, and you better be doing your due diligence and checking it out. That's what you're paid to do. Not say, oh, well, she invested or he invested, so it must be okay.
When you're talking to your students, and I know that you also are a partner with Madison Dearborn Partners, when you're talking to you know, young companies or students that want to start the next $100 million or unicorn company, you know, what are some of the mistakes that Elizabeth Holmes made that you try to steer them away from making? Is this, to me, would be one of the big ones, but are there others that you think that they should avoid?
I think we use this expression sometimes. What you really want to do is you want to under-promise and over-deliver. If you promise the moon, and even if you can get halfway to the moon, you're going to lose a lot of credibility. And if you think about any relationship, it's based on trust. It's based on people believing what you're saying. And I think sometimes there are people, fortunately, I don't think there's a lot of them, who actually believe, well, you know what, I can keep a secret. You know, and no one really has to know that this doesn't work as well as we're saying that it does. But, you know, one of the expressions that one of my mentors taught me a long time ago, he said, you know what? Well, you can't keep secrets. Or then he said, well, maybe two people can keep a secret if one of them is dead, okay? There's not a lot. You know, you can get away with something for a little while, but think about it. Eventually, things are going to blow up. It may take a little longer. This one took a little longer, and I think it's because she got a couple of key people invested and a couple of people on her board that, you know, at the end of the day, people said, oh, I'm sure it's going to be okay. But if you want to build a success, I tell this to the students all the time, you want to build a successful company, a lot of it is going to be answering a couple of, I think, pretty key questions. What are your values? What's your purpose? What difference do you want to make? You are a person of your word. Are you trustworthy? Because I got to tell you, you break that trust, you're done. I tell the kids, you're not going to get a second chance, okay? Well, what's that other expression? You know, what is it? Something like, you only get one chance to make a first impression, right?
Right. Very important when it comes to whatever it is you're working on, certainly. Well, thank you very much for that, Harry. It's important, I think, for everybody who's a young, up-and-coming, or even established executive to remember that trust is really the basis of everything when going forward.
Absolutely.
Harry Kramer is the former CEO of Baxter Healthcare and a partner with Madison Dearborn, and you can find him at Kellogg School of Management. Thanks for being with us today.
Great to be with you. Take good care. Have a great day.
Thank you. Good weekend to you as well. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John Williams today. We've had such fun over the last week and a half or so. Chris Orestes from Retirement Genius joins me now on the line. Hey, Chris.
Good to be here,
Chris,
today.
There we go. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. Chris is the founder of Retirement Genius, retirementgenius.com. He has been a recognized expert in retirement. And what we thought we would do, Chris, is talk a little bit about Medicare since we officially are at open enrollment season. So tell us what we need to expect from this year's open enrollment.
Well, it is the most wonderful time of the year. Open enrollment started today, and it'll run from October 15th through December 7th. And this is the opportunity for everybody that's enrolled in Medicare to make changes to their plan enrollment and look at how their coverage is set up. Are they in traditional Medicare or are they in Medicare Advantage? And does that still work for them? If they're getting their prescription drug coverage from Medicare Part D because they're in traditional Medicare, they can swap between Part D plans. There's a whole host of options for how their prescription drug is provided. But this is that window, and you don't want to miss it. You don't want to take it for granted. Don't blow it off. Roll up your sleeves. Look at the plan options and make sure it's matching up to your lifestyle.
Now, I think a lot of people find retirement and choosing the Medicare plan to be very confusing. Is there maybe one or two things that you should focus on? Is it the drug formulary that you should think about, or is it maybe the other kinds of things that come into the Medicare Advantage package? How do you weigh those?
You want to start by deciding, should you be in traditional Medicare coverage or should you be in a Medicare Advantage plan? And the difference between them is, in traditional coverage, you will be able to get access to care providers who accept Medicare anywhere in the country at the same rates without question. When you're in Medicare Advantage, that's an HMO, PPO-style plan that comes from an insurance company that's a lot like when you are getting coverage through a group employer. And inside Medicare Advantage, that means you're part of a network. You got to be in a coverage network. So you got to make sure your doctor and specialists are in there. But some of the advantages to Medicare Advantage versus traditional is that it can also include dental, vision, hearing, wellness, and your drug coverage will be in there too. So it's all under one roof.
So those things really, it's such a big difference. Is there any other way for somebody to tell other than digging in? And where do you go to get in, get the deeper information?
Well, you can certainly find a lot of good resources, such as ours, retirementgenius.com, but you can go to the actual Medicare website that's offered by CMS.gov. There you will find all sorts of information about Medicare, but also local experts. There are agents and advisors in every community across America that can specialize and give you help in picking through your Medicare plan choices, help you enroll in those choices. So you have online options, you have government options, and you have local resources with advisors and agents in your community that can answer your questions and help you enroll into the right plans.
So I know that you've written a couple of books. I'm always partial to book authors because I've written a few myself. Your book called Retire Like a Genius. Tell me what that one's about.
Retire Like a Genius is going to be coming out in early 2022. And what we're talking about there, and this is a big part of what we do at Retirement Genius, is talking about how to achieve a well-balanced retirement that encompasses three legs of a stool. One, financial planning. Two, health and long-term care security. And three, lifestyle enrichment and fulfillment. You need to bring them all together to truly have a good retirement. I like to say to people, you know, if you're out there working hard to make money, save, invest, which you should be, but you're neglecting your health, you're neglecting your relationships, what good is it going to be to retire with a beautiful, fancy car in your garage if you're too sick to drive it or you have nobody to share it with? So it's about achieving the well-balanced retirement.
Ah, that's so great. And you're expecting that to be out early in 2022, and I'm sure people can get more information from your website, retirementgenius.com, right?
Right. Look for the book, Retire Like a Genius, and we provide all kinds of information across Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, insurance, you name it. We want to help seniors get information and then find the right resources so they can build their well-balanced retirement.
It's great. Great information. Chris Arestis is the president of Retirement Genius, and you can find out more, as he just said, at his website, retirementgenius.com. Chris, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much. And everybody, take advantage of Medicare open enrollment. It started today.
Absolutely. Have a good weekend yourself. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk with Rochelle Gorey. She's co-founder and CEO of a Chicago-based startup called Spring4 that offers you links to all sorts of free resources, both on the federal, state, and at nonprofits as well. So you're not going to want to miss that. And then at the end of the next half hour, we're going to talk with Anita Kramer and get an update from the Urban Land Institute and their economic real estate economic forecast for 2022 and 2023 with some cool information about the real estate sector. So stay tuned for all that and more coming up next on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Kling, sitting in for John. It's been an awesome week. Had a great time. You can always find me online at thinklink.com or my other website, bestmoneymoves.com. Rochelle Gorey is co-founder and CEO of Spring4. Spring4 is a local Chicago company, and what they have done is they have vetted over 20,000 resources that you can use to help yourself regain financial control if it's spun out of control with COVID, not that that's happened to anybody, help you reduce expenses and get back on track with all of your expenses and pay. Rochelle, tell us a little bit. You know, you and I had a chance to talk yesterday, which was really wonderful, and I learned a little bit more about your company. But I want you to share some of the things that you've done since you started this company with our listeners today. So tell me, how did you decide to start this company?
Hi, Elise. Great to be here today. Well, thanks. I had spent my entire career working in affordable housing, community reinvestment, helping financial institutions and nonprofits develop affordable homeownership opportunities and help families keep and sustain their homeownership opportunities. So in the early 2000s when we saw many families experiencing mortgage delinquencies, we decided that we needed to create a technology solution that would make it easy and efficient for financial institutions to connect their borrowers with on-the-ground resources that could address the reasons why somebody was unable to make their mortgage payment. So since 2005, that's exactly what we've been doing. And we vet and curate resources throughout the country. And we work with financial institutions, nonprofits, fintech companies, really any company that's interested in either helping their customers or employees connect to financial health resources.
And so when you say financial health resources, give us a specific example of what kind of local help somebody in the Chicago area might be able to find on this website.
Sure. We're helping connect people to resources and programs that are available through nonprofit or government entities. So help with reducing utility assistance, utility payments, or financial counseling and budgeting help, or employment resources or job training programs if somebody's out of work or underemployed. We help people reduce their health care expenses, knowing that more and more families are seeing increases in their health care expenses. During COVID, we researched and found specific resources that could help reduce costs in food, financial, and even rental resources for people in need.
Now, when we spoke yesterday, you said that I think it was more than 20,000 different individual resources. How many do you have on the website right now?
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, at last count, we were over 20,000, but our data team is researching resources every day. So, we continually add and grow our resource database. We want to make certain that no matter where a person lives, they'll always find up-to-date and accurate resources through Spring 4.
As a, you know, it's interesting, as a fellow female CEO, I'm sure that you have learned a number of lessons about what it's like to start a business. Why don't you share one or two of those with us? What have you learned and what would you do differently if you were starting this business today?
Great questions. Well, I think it's certainly important to find and curate a team that has different skill set and strengths. So, it's really important to have a team that is, in some ways, smarter than you and can do things better and differently. I have a certain skill set, but my team definitely has a broad and vast experience in areas that, they're better at than me. As far as being a female leader, I think it's really important to network and to build relationships with other organizations who can help, and not to be afraid to ask for help.
I think a lot of people are afraid to ask for help because they think it makes them look weak, or maybe they don't know what they're doing. But do you have an example of a time you raised your hand and asked for help and something really wonderful happened?
Sure. I mean, I think, you don't know what you don't know. And so I certainly had really no intention to, be a CEO or start a company, but I saw a problem that needed to be addressed. So I kind of just rolled up my sleeves and said, you know what, we got to figure out how to do this and how to get help to the people who need it most, because I definitely believe that when you address the reason why somebody is not paying their bills, you can get them paying and saving again. So that meant reaching out to other people that had started businesses who had experience in the business world. I didn't come from the business world in that, I wasn't a business major. I studied public policy and have a master's degree in that. But this was a new world for me. But I think that, just operating in the business world and always making sure to put your best foot forward and build relationships is probably the most important thing to being successful.
Such great advice. Rochelle Gorey is co-founder and CEO of Spring 4, and you can find out more at their website, spring4.com. Rochelle, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Here's Steve Grzanich with the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. United Airlines is adding new international routes in the largest transatlantic expansion in its history. It includes 10 new flights and 5 new destinations. They are Spain, Portugal, Norway, the Spanish Canary Islands, and Jordan. The new routes will begin this spring in anticipation of an international travel boom as COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. United's also adding new daily flights between Chicago and Milan, joining existing seasonal flights between Chicago and Rome. John Deere is calming concerns about product supply after thousands of workers in Iowa, Illinois, and Kansas went on strike. Deere says it will still have people working at its factories to keep daily operations up and running. United Auto Workers Union members rejected a new labor contract last weekend, and no agreement was met by the strike deadline Thursday. This is the first strike at John Deere since 1986. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that. Steve Alexander has the business of food.
It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and today Jim wants to talk about fall colors. And you know, Jim, the Northeast gets all of the headlines because of their fall foliage.
Oh, yeah.
But here in the Midwest, we've got some beautiful colors. Ours are just as good, aren't they?
No comparison.
Oh.
It's too bad. Our soil, pH in our soil, is very alkaline. Out in the East Coast, your soils are extremely acidic. We have a more harsh and hotter climate than they generally have in New England. New York, Connecticut, those states and those areas, New Jersey, they're much milder than we are. They're more like the area of Illinois from Springfield south. So it's quite a different situation there.
Okay, but I still think ours are pretty.
Yeah, and it depends on the year. Much of it depends on the year. For a short week or so in the fall, we get the fall colors, and some years they can be absolutely brilliant. Why do we have fall colors? A lot of people think it's because of Jack Frost. Jack Frost has nothing to do with it. It has to do with plant genetics and the weather. First of all, we have the yellows. These are carotenes and xanthophylls. Those pigments are always present in the leaves, but they're hidden by the chlorophyll. When we get into the short days and cool temperatures, chlorophyll is reduced and the yellows begin to show up. So we have things like red buds and larch and birch and witch hazel that turn beautiful hues of gold. Our fall color starts in September with poison ivy and sumac. You know, poison ivy, if it wasn't for the poison part of it, it's a gorgeous vine, beautiful red. The honey locust is one of the most colorful right now in the state of Illinois. And quite quickly, they're going to be losing their leaves, so enjoy them. And by the way, now's a great time to plant trees and shrub. If you are looking for a tree, go out to the nursery when the color is at best. Pick out a tree. Pick out a perfect tree that's as colored up as you want it. Tag it, and the nursery will move it to your yard at the right time, and you'll have that beautiful fall color in your yard next year.
Mr. Fizz, from the farm to your belly, today is National Shawarma Day. Chicken's my favorite. Also, cheeseheads, it's National Cheese Curd Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm Elise Gling, sitting in for John. He'll be back on Monday, and there's the whole weekend ahead of us. Don't forget to tune in on at 6:30 a.m. on Sunday for This Week in Wealth, my half-an-hour conversation with investor Tom Fortino about the things that you need to know. Right now, Anita Kramer, who is Senior Vice President of the Urban Land Institute Center for Capital Markets and Real Estate, joins me on the line. Hi, Anita.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. So I know that a few months ago, the Urban Land Institute forecasted that the real estate sector is poised for a rebound, both in single-family housing, hotel, industrial, that the forecast is very, very strong. And I know that yesterday you released a new survey on the emerging trends in real estate, and I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about that. So thank you for joining me today.
My pleasure.
So tell me what your report, what some of the highlights were of the report.
Sure. Well, Elise, I can tell you we heard, after hearing from almost 2,000 of senior real estate professionals across the country, that they have very high expectations for 2022. In fact, the highest since not just the rebound to pre-pandemic 19 or early 20, but the highest since 2016. So
we're
very, very positive looking forward. But not a but and, there'll be permanent changes in industry post-pandemic. Over 60% say they will not go back to exactly the way they did things before. So that we won't, we will see changes. And as you know, it won't look like an entirely new world, but in real estate, even changes on the margin have an impact.
Now, one of the things that was interesting to me in your report is that you compare the COVID-19 pandemic with comparable global events over the past 100 years, the Spanish flu, World War One, the Great Depression, World War Two. I mean, these are massive and certainly society-changing levels of events. COVID was part of that, and yet real estate seems to have come out of it glowing. Why do you think that is?
This time around, it was a short-lived impact. It, at the same time, I think the industry really demonstrated incredible flexibility and was able to adapt during the pandemic, so was well-positioned to come out of it, and the recession was short-lived. So altogether, it proved to be not a big dent in how real estate was able to function. Some people many people are saying it's not that we're in a new cycle, we've just resumed the old cycle. Not that there aren't challenges and headwinds.
Now, there's some disruptors to the real estate industry that you list in the report, which I think are pretty interesting. Everything from cybersecurity to construction technology, which is, I mean, I think it's really changing things. 3D printing doesn't seem as big today, but it's on the horizon. We're starting to see new developments of 3D technology, concrete homes that are being printed in other countries, actually, like in Mexico. I know there's a development there. Co-working is a big real estate change. And then I think the biggest disruption we saw is that WeWork imploded.
Yes, although the co-work space is certainly taking its place again in kind of the equation of how the office sector is making is serving the needs of the office using sector. So that is now functioning as kind of the spillover, the flexible space. We're waiting to see whether our expansion is permanent kind of space, so that the co-working space has a place.
I'm sure it does. No, I'm sure it does. We in Chicago, in terms of commercial space, it feels like about 20% of that there's like a 20% vacancy here. Plus, the space that is, you know, leased officially, a lot of that is empty. And I know that the same thing is true in many other major metropolitan cities across the country. When you think about that, what does your forecast say about commercial property in downtown locations?
So that is the place that probably is going to come back in a very different way. So if we look at just briefly the other sectors, without going through each one, generally the demand fundamentals, the demand supply fundamentals are the same. They may play out somewhat differently, but the office, that really there is some structural changes there playing out. So having, and not clear yet exactly where that's going to end up, but likely there'll be a overall lower demand for office. So what exactly each firm does, you hear the headlines of people going completely remote or we're completely office, but in between there's a recognition that the hybrid model is definitely a part of the equation now, and exactly how that hybrid model plays out will be different for each firm. Not that we never had remote working before, but it's certainly the breadth of the number of firms that it will touch, and the depth to which it might might be adopted by each firm will be the ultimate answer. But the feeling is that if there are two sides, that they're not that far apart. So you might hear, yes, we're going back to the office at least 3 days a week. Yes, we're not going back to the office. We'll be working at home 2 or 3 days a week. What does that sound like to you?
It sounds like a lot of flexibility, and that companies who invest in flexibility are going to be rewarded for it on the other side. Maybe not so much the people who own the building. Anita Kramer is Senior Vice President of the Urban Land Institute Center for Capital Markets and Real Estate, and she is the author of the latest report, Emerging Trends in Real Estate. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here. Hey, I've had a great time with you all. You can find me online, thinkglink.com or bestmoneymoves.com.